"It's no use trying to argue with you," began Amy. "Not the least, my dear," interrupted Joe. "So let us look amiable, and drop a card here, as the kings are evidently out, for which I'm deeply grateful." The family card case having done its duty, the girls walked on, and Joe uttered another thanksgiving on reaching the fifth house and being told that the young ladies were engaged. "Now let us go home and never mind Aunt March today. We can run down there any time, and it's really a pity to trail through the dust in our best bibs and tuckers when we are tired and cross. Speak for yourself, if you please. Aunt likes to have us pay her the compliment of coming in style and making a formal call. It's a little thing to do, but it gives her pleasure, and I don't believe it will hurt your things half so much as letting dirty dogs and clumping boys spoil them. Stoop down, and let me take the crumbs off your bonnet." "What a good girl you are, Amy," said Jo, with a repentant glance from her own damaged costume to that of her sister, which was fresh and spotless still. "I wish it was as easy for me to do little things to please people as it is for you. I think of them, but it takes too much time to do them. So I wait for a chance to confer a great favor and let the small ones slip. But they tell best in the end, I fancy." Amy smiled and was mollified at once, saying with a maternal air, "Women should learn to be agreeable, particularly poor ones, for they have no other way of repaying the kindnesses they receive. If you'd remember that and practice it, you'd be better liked than I am, because there is more of you. I'm a crotchety old thing, and always shall be. But I'm willing to own that you are right. Only it's easier for me to risk my life for a person than to be pleasant to him when I don't feel like it. It's a great misfortune to have such strong likes and dislikes, isn't it? It's a greater not to be able to hide them. I don't mind saying that I don't approve of Tudor any more than you do, but I'm not called upon to tell him so. Neither are you, and there is no use in making yourself disagreeable because he is. But I think girls ought to show when they disapprove of young men, and how can they do it except by their manners? Preaching does not do any good, as I know to my sorrow, since I've had Teddy to manage, but there are many little ways in which I can influence him without a word, and I say we ought to do it to others if we can. Teddy is a remarkable boy and can't be taken as a sample of other boys," said Amy, in a tone of solemn conviction, which would have convulsed the remarkable boy if he had heard it. "If we were belles, or women of wealth and position, we might do something, perhaps, but for us to frown at one set of young gentlemen because we don't approve of them, and smile upon another set because we do, wouldn't have a particle of effect, and we should only be considered odd and puritanical. So we are to countenance things and people which we detest, merely because we are not belles and millionaires, are we? That's a nice sort of morality. I can't argue about it. I only know that it's the way of the world, and people who set themselves against it only get laughed at for their pains. I don't like reformers, and I hope you will never try to be one. I do like them, and I shall be one if I can. For in spite of the laughing, the world would never get on without them. We can't agree about that, for you belong to the old set, and I to the new. You will get on the best, but I shall have the liveliest time of it. I should rather enjoy the brickbats and hooting, I think. Well, compose yourself now, and don't worry out with your new ideas. I'll try not to. But I'm always possessed to burst out with some particularly blunt speech or revolutionary sentiment before her. It's my doom, and I can't help it." They found Aunt Carol with the old lady, both absorbed in some very interesting subject, but they dropped it as the girls came in, with a conscious look which betrayed that they had been talking about their nieces. Joe was not in a good humour, and the perverse fit returned, but Amy, who had virtuously done her duty, kept her temper and pleased everybody, was in a most angelic frame of mind. This amiable spirit was felt at once, and both the aunts my-deared her affectionately. Looking, what they afterwards said emphatically, "That child improves every day." "Are you going to help about the fair, dear?" asked Mrs. Carroll, as Amy sat down beside her with the confiding air elderly people like so well in the young. "Yes, aunt. Mrs. Chester asked me if I would, and I offered to tend a table, as I have nothing but my time to give. "I'm not," put in Joe decidedly. "I hate to be patronized, and the Chesters think it's a great favor to allow us to help them with their highly connected fare. I wonder you consented, Amy. They only want you to work." "I am willing to work. It's for the freedmen as well as the Chesters, and I think it very kind of them to let me share the labor and the fun. Patronage does not trouble me when it is well meant." "Quite right and proper. I like your grateful spirit, my dear. It's a pleasure to help people who appreciate our efforts. Some do not, and that is trying," observed Aunt March, looking over her spectacles at Joe, who sat apart, rocking herself with a somewhat morose expression. If Joe had only known what a great happiness was wavering in the balance for one of them, she would have turned dove-like in a minute. But unfortunately, we don't have windows in our breasts, and cannot see what goes on in the minds of our friends. Better for us that we cannot as a general thing, but now and then it would be such a comfort, such a saving of time and temper. By her next speech, Joe deprived herself of several years of pleasure, and received a timely lesson in the art of holding her tongue. "I don't like favors. They oppress and make me feel like a slave. I'd rather do everything for myself and be perfectly independent." "Ahem," coughed Aunt Carol softly, with a look at Aunt March. "I told you so," said Aunt March, with a decided nod to Aunt Carol. Mercifully unconscious of what she had done, Jo sat with her nose in the air, and a revolutionary aspect which was anything but inviting. "Do you speak French, dear?" asked Mrs. Carroll, laying her hand on Amy's. "Pretty well, thanks to Aunt March, who lets Esther talk to me as often as I like," replied Amy with a grateful look, which caused the old lady to smile affably. "How are you about languages?" asked Mrs. Carroll of Jo.
"Don't know a word. I'm very stupid about studying anything. Can't bear French. It's such a slippery, silly sort of language," was the brusque reply.
Another look passed between the ladies, and Aunt March said to Amy,
"You are quite strong and well now, dear, I believe. Eyes don't trouble you any more, do they?"
"Not at all, thank you, ma'am. I'm very well, and mean to do great things next winter, so that I may be ready for Rome, whenever that joyful time arrives."
"Good girl! You deserve to go, and I'm sure you will some day," said Aunt March,
with an approving pat on the head, as Amy picked up her ball for her.
"Cross patch, draw the latch, sit by the fire and spin,"
squalled Polly, bending down from his perch on the back of her chair to peep into Joe's face, with such a comical air of impertinent inquiry that it was impossible to help laughing.
"Most observing bird," said the old lady.
"Come and take a walk, my dear," cried Polly,
hopping toward the china closet, with a look suggestive of lump sugar. "Thank you, I will. Come, Amy." And Joe brought the visit to an end, feeling more strongly than ever that calls did have a bad effect upon her constitution. She shook hands in a gentlemanly manner, but Amy kissed both the aunts, and the girls departed, leaving behind them the impression of shadow and sunshine, which impression caused Aunt March to say as they vanished,
"You'd better do it, Mary. I'll supply the money."
And Aunt Carol to reply decidedly, "I certainly will, if her father and mother consent." Chapter 30. Consequences. Mrs. Chester's fare was so very elegant and select that it was considered a great honor by the young ladies of the neighborhood to be invited to take a table, and everyone was much interested in the matter. Amy was asked, but Jo was not, which was fortunate for all parties, as her elbows were decidedly akimbo at this period of her life, and it took a good many hard knocks to teach her how to get on easily. The haughty, uninteresting creature was let severely alone. But Amy's talent and taste were duly complimented by the offer of the art table, and she exerted herself to prepare and secure appropriate and valuable contributions to it. Everything went on smoothly till the day before the fair opened. Then there occurred one of the little skirmishes, which it is almost impossible to avoid, when some 25 women, old and young, with all their private piques and prejudices, try to work together. Maychester was rather jealous of Amy, because the latter was a greater favourite than herself. And just at this time, several trifling circumstances occurred to increase the feeling.